Welcome back to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still in studio with me is Nate. We're going to talk now about the situation in Iraq, specifically with regard to Iraqi Kurdistan. There's been a lot of interesting developments happening there in the context of all the other interesting developments happening, which we mostly focused on last week. So essentially, the situation with Kurdistan is that it's a region, not a country, that exists across multiple different countries in the area. Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran all have significant populations. They're all geographically mostly contiguous, and they've all been basically oppressed by the ruling governments at various points in all four of those countries. Woodrow Wilson had apparently, during World War I, when he was on his big anti-colonialism kick, as he had a habit of overpromising everybody, overpromised he could deliver an independent Kurdistan when the U.S. entered World War I. He did not realize, unfortunately, that the United Kingdom and France and the Russian Empire, before it was overthrown by the communists, had already made a secret deal to set up different governments that did not involve an independent Kurdistan, that they were going to draw lines through the whole Kurdish area. And this, you know, did not go over great when it was revealed by the Bolsheviks after the October Revolution, because they had access to all the secret documents once they seized the government. And Woodrow Wilson kept on trying to say that he was going to liberate all these different areas. And unfortunately, the general result was that most of the former colonial territories of the defeated powers, you know, the Ottoman Empire, the German Empire, and so on and so forth, and even the Russian Empire, because it got taken by the communists, a lot of those overseas territories just got reassigned to Britain and France to administer. Kurdistan ended up being, as I said, divided over these four different countries. Turkey was allowed to remain, you know, independent of the colonial powers, but had a whole new government that then proceeded to start a massive genocide of 1.5 million Armenians, as we've talked about previously on the show, and various other ethnic groups, because they kind of wanted to have a monolithic, ethnically Turkish state as long as they weren't going to be a multinational empire anymore. Syria and Lebanon were transferred to France. What's now Israel and Palestine were transferred to Britain. There was a sort of puppet monarchy established in Iraq that was under British control effectively. You get all those governments like in Saudi Arabia and everything. And, you know, if you know the story of T.E. Lawrence, he made a whole bunch of promises, much like Woodrow Wilson, about how he was going to get them all independence if they sided against the Ottomans and rebelled. And then he didn't realize that his government had also sold him out, essentially. So a lot of people got kind of screwed over in World War I by these secret decisions before the war was even over. And one of the groups was Kurdistan and the Kurdish people. So then you have a situation where you have Turkish Kurds, you have Syrian Kurds, you have Iraqi Kurds, and you have Iranian Kurds. And for a while, there was a lot of sort of cross-border cooperation between them as they tried to throw off their various governments. But lately that has sort of broken down, which is not all that surprising, because people tend to after a while go, well, if I can get this amount of power, then at least I have that and I don't have to share it with any of the other people. You know, I'm not going to have to share it with the Syrian Kurdish leadership or the Turkish Kurdish leadership or whatever. So for a long, long time, because there was a long-running Kurdish insurgency in southeastern Turkey, the Turkish government, which was dominated for many years by the military, throughout most of the 20th century was oppressing their Kurdish population and trying to prevent Kurdish regions in other neighboring countries from becoming independent. Under the government that was in power in 2003 in Turkey, there was a lot of concern that the 2003 Iraq invasion was going to help the goal of an independent Kurdistan in Iraq, which they didn't want. And they were concerned that this was, you know, I mean, it was a reasonable concern if they were opposed to that goal, given that the United States had been running those no-fly zones over Kurdistan since 1991, which we talked about last week. But then what happened was a new government came into power under the AK party, the AKP, and they basically, their major goal internally was to get rid of the influence of the military over the democratic state. That was their huge goal that they had. And they've by and large succeeded in getting rid of a lot of those influences. In fact, there was just a ruling handed down that the leaders of the coup d'etat in the 1980s, who are respectively, I believe, 97 years old and like 80 something years old or whatever, that they are going to go to prison for the rest of their lives because of their role in the military coup. So there's been a lot of progress on reducing the power and influence of the military. One of the other things that happened was that they gradually softened their position to the Iraqi Kurds specifically. The Iraqi Kurds had managed to establish a pretty functioning independent regional government, but not a fully independent country. And then over the past few years, specifically since 2007, at the height of the Iraqi civil war, the AKP really made peace, especially Prime Minister Erdogan made peace with the Iraqi Kurds and started working with them pretty closely, which was a huge reversal. The other thing that we see development there is that, and this is just in the last year and kind of really unthinkable, is that as Prime Minister Erdogan's popularity and support has fallen, he has had to find allies in more and more unusual places, which means that he's even formed alliances with the PKK, the leading separatist party in Turkey for the Kurds, because he thinks that they'll help him, and they've said they will. As long as he's willing to give more autonomy and cultural respect to the Kurds, they will back his bid to try to, which is probably never going to happen now, bid to become president and have the presidency be the most powerful position in Turkey rather than the prime ministership. Sort of a Russia-Putin-Medvedev move there. So what we've seen is that the Turkish government, and specifically the AK party and Prime Minister Erdogan, have become much friendlier with the Iraqi Kurdistan regional government. And now we're seeing a situation where Iraq is essentially falling apart again. Kirkuk, a major oil-producing area, has been formally given under the control of the Kurds by the central government in Baghdad, which seems to just be sort of an emergency decision that they made without really thinking through the long-term implications. And that used to be the capital of the Kurdistan region, which means that they've got now their, like, political and spiritual home back. They've got their own independent region functioning. They've got oil production going under their own control. They've got major oil fields. They're exporting oil out through Turkey, and they're in pretty good shape. So, Nate, give me your take on what's going on right now.
I think a huge issue that we're looking at right now is, as you just said, the sale of oil that's now going on in Kurdistan thanks to their partnership with Turkey. Now, there looks like they are exporting some oil thanks to their new pipeline from a Turkish port of Sayhan, if I'm pronouncing that right, I'm not sure. But I think this is huge for Kurdistan, as, you know, it seems like they have a decent amount of oil reservoirs up in the north there. I think a lot of Iraqi oil fields are in the south, but there's enough oil that they can be prosperous up in the north. You just need to find a place to ship it from. And it looks like they're now selling oil to Israel. That's another thing that's been speculated. Apparently there was a tanker that arrived in Israel that, you know, was speculated to come from Kurdistan just because people, various people were tracing it. And this has been reported in several places. I guess it's been officially denied, but it's looking like that is the case. So, I mean, I think the main issue with the Kurds right now is they need to find some external partners for their growth as a nation. So if we're looking at a situation in the next couple of years where Iraq breaks down, basically you see just continuing sectarian violence, civil war, I think the Kurds would do well to strengthen their country and pretty much remain out of the fray to the north as much as possible. I mean, that's obviously never going to completely happen, but I think they just sort of need to strengthen their own economy, strengthen their just population, develop better relations with Iran, Syria. Obviously, that's difficult, but I think Turkey is obviously the most crucial, just considering that there's been a history of conflict between Iraqi Kurds and just the Turks. So, and I think the U.S. can facilitate cooperation here, considering that we are allied with Turkey and we've been working with the Kurds for decades now. So I think that it's pretty crucial for the U.S. to facilitate the development of a more or less autonomous Kurdistan in the north there. I think that will be probably good for the stability. Actually, I'm not even sure if it would be good for the stability. I just think it would be good for the Kurds. It'd
be good for the Kurds. Yeah. But I don't know if it means anything for the rest of the country.
Well, no, I'm thinking less about Iraq and actually more about like Syria and Iran and all that. I mean, not that Kurdistan is necessarily going to try to expand or anything like that.
Right. Well, that's an interesting point. So since the height of that sort of post-2003 Iraq civil war, you know, around 2007 or so, as I said, the Kurdish regional government, the KRG, has been very careful not to align itself materially or rhetorically with these other separatist groups in these neighboring countries, you know, in Syria, in Turkey, and Iran. Turkey, as Nate said, has done military operations into Kurdish territory in Iraq. Kurdistan there has never been really happy about that, but they don't, you know, they don't fly off the handle about it. They don't start shooting at the Turkish troops or anything. Similarly, Iran periodically does airstrikes into Iraq in the Kurdish zones because they've got, you know, they're opposed to the PJAK, which is the Iranian ethnically Kurdish separatist party. And this sort of cooperation with Turkey, or at least non-support for other Kurdish separatists, is the thing that's allowed them to become friends with Turkey and allowed Turkey to feel more comfortable about working with them. They're no longer going to be Turkey's number one foreign threat. And it's also, for Turkey's benefit, has become, as a lot of analysts have said, it's created this buffer zone, right? They've still got refugees pouring into Turkey from Syria, but at least they don't have the same situation from Iraq. And in fact, about a half 500,000 Sunni refugees, Sunni Arab refugees, have fled into the Kurdish areas and been welcomed by the Kurdish areas in Iraq as the ISIS troops roll in from the West. And those refugees, were it not for the Kurdish regional government, would probably be going to Turkey, which right. means that this is preventing Turkey from having to deal with 500,000 more refugees on top of the 500,000 or so that they've already taken in from Syria. This means that they've got an effective security and refugee buffer against the instability, which means working with Iraqi Kurdistan and maybe even having them be independent is a lot more advantageous to Turkey than it's a potential source of problems. Additionally, even the Syrian Kurdish zones in the civil war have not gotten much help from the Iraqi counterparts. They have succeeded in really breaking away for the most part from the Syrian regime, but they haven't gotten a lot of help from across the border in Iraq. There's a lot of this idea of, well, you know, if we start working with you or if we join up into one big country or something, now we're going to have to share power and no one's really interested in that. But, you know, you periodically the Iraqi Kurds will take control of border outposts or whatever along with, you know, along the Syrian border. And that's mostly to prevent ISIS from coming in through those border points. But for the most part, they just do not care about the Syrian, you know, people. And you might say, oh, that's a shame. They should all work together. But from a real politics standpoint, this is a great approach because it gets them their own independent or as close as possible to independent state without being set upon by everyone who's freaking out about this. I mean, Assad is certainly not in a position to oppose an independent Kurdistan in Iraq right now. And as long as they don't start working with the Syrian Kurds, they don't get tangled into the Syrian civil war. They've got a good thing going on. They can just keep this kind of going. And Turkey's position is basically, yeah, as long as you don't work with or help any of these other separatist movements, we're going to help you. We're going to help you sell your oil. We're going to help you get it out to the Mediterranean and so on and so forth. Now, obviously, Iraq's not happy about this in Baghdad, in the central government, but the Kurdish position is that millions of dollars have been withheld in oil royalties that are supposed to allegedly be going to the Kurds. And there was an interesting interview with the BBC where the Kurdish regional government's prime minister, Neshirvan Barzani, said it will be, quote, almost impossible, end quote, for Iraq to go back to the way things were before the fall of Mosul to the ISIS forces. Mosul's another historically Kurdish, but now Arab occupied city. And the KRG is also now describing everything in sort of pre-Mosul or post-Mosul terms. So it seems very clear that they have considered this to be a major change. And maybe they're not going to formally declare independence, but it's not going back to the way it was.
Yeah, and this goes back to something we talked about last week in the sense that as we were talking about the ISIS situation, it just seems like the dream of a unified Iraq, which was something that we were sold after the surge, that this had basically locked up Iraq and we could go home and, you know, jobs over pretty much, we won the war. I mean, that just gets exposed as a complete lie. I mean, that was never going to happen from the beginning. I mean, ever since the civil war kicked up after the ouster of Saddam, after that mosque was bombed, it seems like pretty much it's been all downhill from there. From the Kurds' perspective, obviously the most sensible thing to do is just strengthen their own government, work well with other international groups to gain this own support, keep its ties with the U.S. close. Of course, the U.S. Instituted the no-fly zone back in the day after the first Gulf War. It's traditionally been a pretty big supporter of the Kurds.
Yeah, democratic elections and everything.
I mean, they are in many ways a model for the rest of the Middle East in terms of what to do as a sort of minority ethnic group in a larger ethnic country. They have sort of tried to form their own government, tried to form their own economic resource basis. I wouldn't say that they've done everything particularly smoothly. I mean, especially when you think about all the attacks with the PKK going back to only a couple years ago. But now that it looks like that's more or less under control, I think their alliance with Turkey going forward will be huge, especially as we said, selling some of that oil, whether it's to Israel, whether it's to other countries, just to improve their economy. An alliance with Israel could be beneficial, especially when you start to consider various security concerns. But obviously, I think they should really be engaged in trying to find allies on all different sides, whether that's working or having better relations with Iran, you know, whether it's, you know, going the other direction, you know, working with Israel. Turkey, I think, is probably going to be their most important partner going forwards. So it just seems like amidst all this chaos in Iraq, there is at least a little bit of hope to have a stable just part of Iraq, Kurdistan. And, you know, when you consider for how long the Kurds have suffered and been denied their own country, you know, this is a little bit of positivity coming out of this. So nothing totally positive, but I think this is maybe the silver lining we should look at with the recent ISIS news.
Yeah, I mean, my concern mainly is that I think a lot of the partnership with Turkey is based on the strength of Prime Minister Erdogan and the AK party more broadly. And I worry that, you know, if the AK party falls from power, is this going to disintegrate very quickly? But hopefully, you know, this isn't just a sort of personal relationship. Hopefully this is demonstrated.
This is a real politic decision, both by Turkey and by Kurdistan. Because yeah. I don't think it benefits Turkey to be worrying about terrorist attacks from their borders, so...
Exactly. I think it's monumental that we've got Iraqi Kurdish media outlets reporting, and, you know, who knows if this is true, but the idea that it's even plausible that the official National Party spokesman of the AK party is saying we're prepared to back an independent Iraqi Kurdistan if they declare independence. I mean, that's unthinkable in the past 100 years of Turkish history up until very, very recently, possibly even just the past 365 days or so. So, yeah, this is potentially a huge development there, and as Nate said, possibly a ray of hope. All right, well, we're going to be back in just a minute. We've got more to talk about with regards to the Iraq situation. There's been a few other developments that we wanted to talk a little bit about before we close out the show. So stick around. Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a second.